Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Mutant Chronicles bad news.
Uh-oh.
So last week we got the good news.
Yep. Okay.
Dune storyboard sold at auction for insane amount. Mm-hmm. Warhammer headquarters closed indefinitely.
Okay.
And Soul Mist open beta. So we'll start with the...
bad news?
Yeah, the bad news. Yeah. So this is actually... We have amazing patrons. So if you'd like to be part of that elite, amazing group of people, please visit patreon.com/upturntable. But Quark, one of our patrons, let me know about that adventure that was released for Mutant Chronicles.
Okay.
So Mutant Chronicles released the Purging the Crucible.
Right.
I was like, wow, new content. That's great. They've been promising something for a while. It's been delayed. This is actually the living campaign that they had promised and never delivered on. So it's all the materials that they developed for that with an ending on it.
Oh.
So all the maps and adventures and everybody, everything that was developed for that was already, everyone that had signed up for the living campaign has that already.
Oh, okay.
They just don't have the ending and maybe the layout. Maybe it was, you know, laid out nicely.
So they kind of had like the text document or like the Word
Yeah, they had
document?
PDFs okay. of everything to be able to run this living campaign, and it never materialized. So this people have been kind of sitting on this stuff and waiting to see what was going to happen, because, you know, for a living campaign they have to, you know, have some center where they're collecting data and results,
right,
and showing things, and they just didn't do that.
Oh, right. Okay. Because I was thinking kind of like, well, a living campaign doesn't have an end, right? You'd kind of just keep playing it.
Right.
But no, if you're doing that, let's put out the adventure. Hey, what happened in all of your groups? Collect the data and then update the actual official setting or world based on that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. So this living campaign lived only in the minds of Modiphius developers. So, yeah. And so Quark made the comment that, you know, they've already got all the materials. It's a little bit hard to spend $10 just for, you know, whatever ribbon they wanted to, you know, whatever bow they wanted to tie on the end of this adventure. So that's a shame. So, it's not a good sign. I thought it was a good sign. It was fool's gold, right? A false hope. They're just trying to, material that they've developed, they're just trying to get out there and have people take a look at. So if you didn't sign up for the living campaign, this is going to be new material for you, and it'll be, you know, some new Mutant Chronicles content. But unfortunately, that means they're not actively supporting this system and, well, this game. Yeah, yeah.
Well.
So. It's, yeah.
I'm going to try and be a Reyes on here, which is like really against my type. So I'm going to stick my foot in my mouth here.
Yes.
Do you think does this necessarily mean they're not going to support the game? Right? Because it's kind of like we had this stuff.
Right, right.
We promised it. Let's get it out, even if it's not in a form that we kind of promised, i.e. the living campaign.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if for people who, like you said, didn't back it, objectively, because you were kind of excited about the adventure last week. Did you read it? I mean, okay, that came out really accusatory. My point was, if you didn't get it in the Kickstarter, do you think it's worth the $10 investment for an adventure?
Probably, adventure? Yeah. Sight unseen. Like, I would think that, yeah, it's a new content. $10 is a pretty reasonable amount, you know, seeing that most of the adventure books are like at least 30.
Oh, right,
you know. And if they did a nice layout, they, you know, included the art or whatever that was developed for it. But if you already have it, it's like, okay,
it's not
something
a,
new, please. Yeah, right. So that's too bad. But we'll see. And we'll see if this does well. Maybe that, you know, if people that didn't know anything about this and people kind of knew that watched an amazing video lore series and became interested in Mutant Chronicles, if they if they're coming to this setting and this is the RPG for the setting. So we'll see. And somebody even mentioned in the comments that they are developing a 5e version of Mutant Chronicles.
Well,
so what would you choose? If you had to choose, gun to your head, Savage Worlds or 5e Mutant Chronicles, what would you play?
Is the bullet an option? No, because I want to see my kid grow up. Damn it. All right. Rough.
Yeah.
So Savage Worlds or... 5e adaptation from Mutant Chronicles?
Yeah, so the setting is Mutant Chronicles, but the system would be...
Then I think... from what I remember of the Mutant Chronicles war game, because that's the only one I play, I would... I would probably go Savage Worlds, because it's a kind of a classless system, and you don't have those archetypes and stuff. I don't see you hammering Mutant Chronicles into a class and level system, which is kind of what you would have to do, I would assume, unless you're going to really strip it down to like D20 basics. I don't see it working with Mutant Chronicles. So I would go with Savage Worlds, where you kind of pick an archetype, pick those edges and hindrance to kind of, not custom build, but it seems a bit more freeform than...
And more pulp, a little bit more.
Yeah, a little bit more pulp. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, interesting. So,
However, I can't, I mean... It is the most popular elf game in the world right now. So while I don't particularly like it and scroll past stuff that's done for 5e, I cannot fault anyone, big company or small independent designer who says, I need money.
Right.
And making it for 5e is going to get eyeballs on it. So let's do that. I respect that decision, even if I don't agree with it.
Yeah, it's kind of like choosing a publishing platform. You know, you don't. Amazon leaves a bad taste in your mouth. They take a big bite out of your profit, but everyone's going to see it. It's one of those kind of sacrifices.
Yeah. Oh well.
Yeah. But so speaking of things that have never been made, like a 5e version of Mutant Chronicles. The storyboards for the unproduced Dune movie that was being developed in the 70s went on sale. So this is, if you've seen the documentary Jodorowsky's Dune, this is Alejandro Jodorowsky. He either is an amazingly charismatic guy or he's got really good drugs because he put together a beyond dream team to produce a film adaptation of Dune, having never read the book. Someone explained the story to him.
Okay.
And so what they did to raise money, to find investors, is they produced storyboards. And these storyboards were produced by Mobius, the French comic book artist, and some of the most amazing illustrators ever. And they just made this giant telephone book of their pencil drawings and illustrations.
That's cool.
And then just shopped it around. And so they probably between 10 and 20 copies of these existed at that time when they were actively fundraising in the 70s. One of the existing copies just sold for nearly $3 million at auction in Paris. I think it was Christie's. Yeah, Christie's. So they expected about 40,000. Okay. The 28 to 40,000 was the range. And so it 10 times that, almost $3 million US it went for. So it's a collection of everything. So it's the storyboards that were produced in the 70s. So this cast and everyone committed, everybody that I'm going to name has committed to doing this film. It's just the money didn't happen. So the Emperor of the Universe was going to be played by Salvador Dali. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Paul Atreides was going to be Mick Jagger. Pink Floyd was involved in the soundtrack. And the list goes on. It just like he just thought of the most wild person to do something, and they got involved.
Yeah. Okay, because I haven't watched all of the new movie. I've watched bits and pieces of it because of playing on the break room. Growing up, well, not necessarily growing up, but obviously watching the 1984 David Lynch movie, that, I think, colored my perception image of what the Dune universe looked like. Because I'm rereading the books now. I'm almost done with Dune Messiah, and I must not have read that book before.
Oh, yeah?
Because I don't remember all the stuff that's going on. And, I know the kind of the plot, but anyway, nothing really in the books indicate that kind of fancy, opulent, Baroque style.
No, that's true.
Weird science fantasy. I mean, the imagery, at least, is kind of not referenced in the book.
Right.
So it must be the 1984 version that's kind of coloring my idea that Dune is this kind of like weird, ornate sci-fi thing. My God, the 2021 version was flat and drab and joyless.
Yeah, very minimalist.
So, I don't know.
So this probably would have made the David Lynch version look like a Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
This was insane because, you know, Jodorowsky was originally like an experimental theater producer. And so he's famous for The Holy Mountain, El Topo, like those were kind of the classics. And if you've ever seen any of those movies, like the imagery is just beyond, it's just insane, what he does in his films. So to think about him applying that thinking to Dune and kind of like where he was putting, because he was thinking about you know, just the ideas of what is an emperor of the universe? What is this, you know, messiah boy that sees the future? So that and a lot of psychedelics would have like really, really brought us an insane film. And so, yeah, if you watch that documentary, you'll see a lot of the suggestions of what could have happened. The book itself that went on auction was 268 monochrome plates, 11 color plates, and all photographic reproductions of any art that was produced.
Cool.
So this, you know, he also got, not only Mobius, but Foss, Geiger, and then also the other French illustrator involved. And basically the team he put together for the visual, to do, you know, special effects and visual design and everything kind of stayed together went on to, you know, produce things like Alien. So we saw their works and their initial connection made through this project endured in Hollywood, so we did get to see their production work done and other things. So Blade Runner, Alien, we've seen that kind of stuff. So that's just insane, and I wish they would reproduce that book in some kind of coffee table paperback or something, because I'd love to be able to just go through that entire film as imagined.
I wonder when they say storyboards, I wonder like how much of it they actually boarded out. Like
it was the whole film. Yeah, it was insane.
So we have like we have storyboards for the entire what could have been.
Mobius's like amazing visual presentation, like it was all just pencil sketches, but like, you know, his composition and everything is so amazing. So yeah, you saw like how they were gonna execute certain shots and
ooh, nice.
You know, it was amazing. So unfortunately we will never see that, because a lot of the people involved are dead or very old.
I'd like to imagine there's some alternate universe somewhere where this movie was made, right?
Yes, exactly.
And maybe it's pretty good. I don't know. But what you said about, he kind of did the storyboard not having read the book, based on someone telling him the story, I think in some cases, that's a strength.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I think
It has the potential to be.
Yeah.
Because that was the tie-in to the new one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when the new 2021 version came out, I was seeing a lot of different opinions where people were saying, people who had never read the books were kind of like, not all of them, but people were like, it was big, it was flashy, I had no fucking clue what was happening.
Right, right.
People who read the books were like, yes, this is awesome. It was an amazing, not prequel, but like setup, because this is only like book one. But, like the movie kind of has to appeal to everyone
in a sense. True.
Like, great, you who are not familiar with this property, you decide kind of what are the important parts and what needs to happen to show the audience what's going on.
Because
otherwise there may be too many like sacred cows where like, we have to do this. And you have to, and it's like, do you?
Right. Yeah. The interesting thing about the 2021, version is they made some really interesting choices. Like they stripped out all kind of voiceover and what characters are thinking. And so that had to come across in acting. And so the actors had this huge burden of portraying certain tensions and things. And I think it was executed well.
Okay.
But I'm saying that knowing both the book and the sci-fi series and the Lynch version. So I know that story really well. And so I'm kind of watching like another production of theatrical version of Dune. And so I'm looking for these certain things. Wow, that was a great choice. That was a great choice. So I'm not seeing it fresh at all.
Right.
And just kind of admiring, you know, his version of it, like this interpretation of it. So yeah, it's a difficult thing, but I like a lot of the ideas. I mean, I think he was trying to work against the strange dialogue and how you don't feel like you can relate to these characters by changing the dialogue to more everyday speech. You know, so it humanized them a lot more, because everything around them was so bizarre or so cold and empty, and to make them communicate with each other in a very naturalistic way helped to, you know, work against that. But it doesn't, if you don't know what he's doing, it's odd. It's very odd.
Like, having recently read Dune,
mm-hmm.
nobody in that book is nice, right?
Right.
Not necessarily nice, but I'm like reading, I'm like, I do not believe that Jessica and Duke Leto actually loved each other. We're told we do, right? The dialogue, I'm like, but then I guess we've kind of gone off into the Dune cast, right? But I think I feel that like the focus of Herbert's point or story was the political movement, right? Mm-hmm. Like he wants to tell this story of this political thing, and you do need characters to anchor it, but they're kind of ancillary, right?
Yeah,
you don't necessarily need to care about them because we want to see what happens with this once Paul becomes Messiah, which probably would not translate well to a movie because you kind of need these characters to identify with. Mm. Otherwise, why am I watching it, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's very true. Humanizing that story is difficult, especially because you kind of get this feeling that everybody is a pawn of the Bene Gesserit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, we don't even matter,
who, by the way,
are not
very nice.
We don't matter, do we? We're just being bred, you know, to produce this bloodline.
Oh, man, yeah. I kind of got to that part of my side when we're like, okay, let's look at the brother-sister option to maintain this bloodline. I'd forgotten about that.
What can we do here? Can we work with this? Yep. Well, speaking of Dune, the original kind of preview that if you pre-ordered Dune, the early adventure, kind of quick start adventure, is now available as a full-fledged adventure.
Oh, cool.
So they've kind of the 34-page introductory adventure has been rewritten. They took all the rules out of it because they're assuming you have the core rule book by now. And they changed it because it was very book one based. Now it was you were the first team down on Arrakis, kind of clearing the way, looking for traps and everything for the Atreides.
Kind of the team that got sent down, probably with Duncan Idaho.
Yeah, right,
Like, you know, come back and like, well, we've swept the thing, everything's fine. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of named characters. The shout out Mapes and everything is in it. So this will allow you to use your own house if you've created an original house in this setting to do this same adventure without being House Atreides.
Okay, interesting.
And it's a fun adventure. And that was the complaint I think that Chris and Lyle had. We ran that, and they're just like, "Yeah, I know this. It doesn't feel fun to like talk to Duke Leto." You know, it's like, So I think this will make this a more useful adventure for people that are trying to do their own thing in the Dune universe.
We've talked ad nauseum, I think, about that being the problem with IPs in role-playing games, right? Like, okay, is it Dune if you don't get to talk to the people in the book and go to the places that are shown in the book?
Right.
But at the same time, why am I playing this game if, like, my little house can't actually end up being on the throne, right?
Right,
like,
right. Yeah. No, that's very true. Yeah, so I want to take a look at that and see. And so I'll put a link to that if anyone's interested. If you didn't play that and are getting into Dune late, have the core book or at least the PDF. Mm. You can run this. And it's very easy to run. It's very fun. And I like that basically the early version of it was just a Word doc. And so that was the first time that I had run something that I was like writing all over beforehand and then during, because it was a kind of a destructible document. So I printed it out and was just scribbling all over it. And so that made it much more fun, like multiple sessions. I could go back and like, we did decide this and we decided this. So all the details were recorded as we're playing.
So notes, very useful during a game, especially for the GM.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I would recommend. It's a fun little adventure.
Interesting. I'm going to have to go look at that.
Hmm, definitely. And just in time for the holiday weekend, a major sewer collapse happened in Nottingham, England.
Okay.
So the Games Workshop headquarters is shut down. So that would be Warhammer World and the offices. I'm not sure if that's actually like manufacturing or warehousing or what that is. But a huge sewer collapse. Originally reported as a water main break, then changed to a sewer collapse, and they are reluctant, I think, to reveal that it's just Skaven tunnels.
That's what I was thinking.
Right?
Yeah.
So the media will not acknowledge the existence of the vile ratmen.
Got to protect that warp stone,
Right.
Or I was thinking some kind of like Nurgle portal.
Yeah, right. Oh, that could be as well. Yep. And we have support of this. We have evidence of this. The possible corruption, the taint of chaos within Games Workshop.
Okay.
Because they did release a statement kind of defending themselves, but at the same time, the wording of the statement is exactly how the Traitor Legions and Chaos speaks about the Imperium.
Okay.
The Imperium is driven by hate. Yeah. Warhammer is not, right? So there are no goodies in Warhammer 40K.
Oh, yeah, I talked about this.
Especially not the Imperium of Man. So the numberless legions of soldiers and zealots bludgeon their way across the galaxy, delivering death to anyone who doesn't adhere to their blinkered view of purity. Almost every man and woman toils in misery, either on the battlefield where the survival is measured in hours or the countless manufactoriums and hive slums. And they even refer to the living corpse of the God Emperor. Yep. That is chaos talk. That is proof that Games Workshop is completely infiltrated by the gods of chaos.
Yeah.
But this was in response to a troll edgelord showing up at an event in Spain with some odd racist, symbolism on him, which was his original manufacturing, and then he registered under the name of Austrian painter, eliciting a fallen National Socialist.
Yeah.
And so,
wow.
So this whole statement was in response, but I've heard a few people say some very interesting things about this, and it was kind of what I was saying that got all the dislikes, I think, during the solo cast is saying Games Workshop doesn't know what IP they have, and they want to sanitize it and make it family friendly. So they're, and I didn't read the whole statement, but they go into the statement basically saying, when in the books and on the packaging it says the heroes of the Imperium, mm-hmm. well, that's propaganda by the Imperium. It's like, well, how are we supposed to discern these things? Yeah, the Space Marines are heroes, and all except the most recent edition, they are called Heroes of the Imperium. Humanity is under siege, the last hope, the defenders of. And, okay, that's heroic. And as a little kid, you would say, cool, I want to be these guys. And I don't think there's anything wrong with then growing up and saying, as you get older, saying, well, these guys are kind of fucked up. And now I read the books, and this is kind of messed up. And that's an interesting – because the whole world does that for you. The whole world – your parents look like these – can do no wrong icons of adulthood, and then
also
you find
in power
out
armor. Yeah,
exactly, and then you found out how alcoholic and philandering they are, and so I think experience of that IP can work well to kind of help you grow up in the world and understand. Yeah, there is no good. It's not, and so the 40K setting is a amoral setting. It's not there's not good versus evil. There is no good because humanity is. It's the end. It's the final days. And so what you do during the final days is you cannibalize each other. You sell your children. You don't do things based on, well, will people think I'm doing good? Yeah. Or what will my neighbors think about this? It's pure survival. So this weird desperation, that's the appeal of the setting for me, is that weird desperation and how ugly humanity gets. But if you stand back and try to look at this as like, well, what if we made a Disney Plus series? How would we present?
Okay, I wasn't going there.
How would we present that? It doesn't work.
No, I had not thought of it that way, but I absolutely agree with you. Going into a Games Workshop store as a kid, these are they're people.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
they're humans, right?
Right, right.
They're the remind me, in design terms and publishing terms, hero image, right? That's the cover that goes in the front of the box.
Right, right.
So two meanings of hero here. They are the hero characters because they're plastered and everywhere you go in. Mm-hmm. They're also the heroes in the more literal sense where they're protecting humanity. So it's exactly what you said. I completely agree that as you grow up, you kind of realize, they're doing some stuff that's not great.
Right, right.
Unfortunately, I don't think everybody gets that, right? You have to have the critical thinking skills to realize that. But I also don't think that Games Workshop makes that easy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You go back to first edition, it is obviously satire and parody because everything is just extreme to an absolutely ridiculous point. But we've had how many editions of it now where I think it's totally fine to go, no, this is in-universe propaganda,
mm-hmm.
but exactly as you said, there's nothing out of universe making that explicitly clear, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So unless I'm glad GW did this, because that whole what is it called? The paradox of tolerance, right? Where to have a tolerant society or group or fandom, you cannot tolerate intolerant people, right? So that whole thing of you got to accept everybody. No, you don't, right? You got to kick out the Nazis, trolls, and bigots if you want to have a nice community.
Right, right.
And that's exactly, hopefully, the steps they're kind of taking.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you also got to go, which they kind of did with this announcement, go outside the fiction, be like, yep, these are the baddies, right? Nobody's good. This is in-universe propaganda. Blah, blah, blah. And I don't think, to really give that statement teeth, I don't think they've been doing it enough.
Right.
Like, maybe this is the start of the, yes, this is satire again, period in GW history, where they're going to make that explicit, because I think for a while now that hasn't been the case.
Right, right. You know, I think, yeah, they've gotten very serious, and a lot of their, like the Black Library fiction and everything, like puts you really deep into the mess that, you know, that it is. So you don't see it as satire anymore. It doesn't look like the fall of the Roman Empire or like late Hellenistic Greece. Right. It, you know, just looks like humans being sons of bitches, you know, to everybody else. You know, it just looks, putting humanity in the worst possible light. And the funny thing is, you know, yeah, you are supposed to be kind of on the human side, or you should be on the human side, is how things are put. But without that satire, without that obvious satire in it, you're not realizing, oh, right, so this is like Catholic Church. Oh, okay, this is Roman Empire. Yeah, you're missing a lot of references and kind of like the historical baggage, like the inspiration they took from science fiction and history. They are stuck with that baggage. Right. They're stuck with, you know, those sorts of images.
I think you're kind of in science fiction case. I think it's, especially in 40K's case, like the universe is fucking stagnant as shit, right? So I think it's fine for them to, like, people have pointed out this came from like 80s culture in Britain, right? The whole
section.
I think it's fine to go like, no, this is and forever will be the tone of 40K, because we're so far in the future that like predictions don't matter. Nope, it's this and always will be this. We can kind of hold on to it.
Yeah.
But someone pointed out, and I forget who on social media, they're like, okay, especially with like the fiction, they were trying to think of a time where in the official lore or fiction, humanity being assholes is and or was the cause of them losing.
Ah.
Right? Like, it kind of seems like they are like the Mary Sue's were like, oh, my flaws, I'm too awesome, right? Where it's like, well, that's not a flaw, right? Like, if you do have flaws, they actually have to come back and affect you and bite you. And I don't think, I'm not a Warhammer 40,000 lore scholar, but I can't think of a time where the Imperium has lost because they're fascist, xenocidal morons that
right?
Like, it's always been like, oh, we got our butts kicked because those tower are just too strong, right? So and also in terms of like pointing out the Imperium is not the heroes, I remember last year where I had to lock my Twitter account down for like a week because of all the fucking harassment I was getting, where I said, despite them being the poster kids, humanity is not the heroes. Right. Not the heroes. So suck it, trolls.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. Yeah, there was some there's been a lot of good points, I think, made about this and looking at this, looking at the setting, but I think it's useful. Like, a company can't control how their IP is perceived and how people enjoy it. Like, if they're gonna put it out there, they can say, you can't come to a tournament, you can't be a public face, we're not gonna put you on the front of the website wearing our t-shirt. Yeah. But you can't control how people enjoy your setting. And if people are gonna really get off on, you know, the genocide or whatever in that setting, you know, you're selling war, and this another YouTuber made this point really well. You're selling war to children, and so you gotta accept everything that comes with war, all the ugliness and horror that exists in war. Otherwise, if you want to be this clean, family friendly company, don't sell war.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't sell, you know, armies and invasions as entertainment.
I mean, it's kind of like I guess a couple points here. It's kind of like the 80s cartoons where I remember like G.I. Joe and all these warriors. Like, what were the bad guys? Robots.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like robots. Why? Because you can't show people killing people. And it's kind of the same thing, right? Yeah, you're selling war. Your factions are all like sentient beings that like bleed and do all this stuff. Except a couple of them, right? But you're just like, yeah, you're killing each other. So you can't really sanitize that unless you do, I mean, I always say Tyranids are the most moral of the 40K factions, only because they're a force of fucking nature and don't have any sentience, really. Like, people versus unthinking bugs, like Starship Troopers.
Right,
like, that's one of the ways you can kind of do it, where it's like, nope, these people are never good, right? But, yeah, like, you can't really sanitize that.
Yeah.
Back to what you said about a company not being able to decide how its fans interacts with it, that's true, but to follow up on or to add that, like, are we the baddies meme? Like, when enough people who are like actual Nazis and all this stuff, yeah, we love this thing, the company's got to go, you know what? Maybe we need to rethink what we're doing here. When, like, that's the other thing. Like, you're always going to have outliers, but if the majority of your fan base is toxic assholes, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, the iconography of your fantasy universe, if that becomes incorporated in like real world hate, then you're going to have to question kind of what you're doing. Yeah, so it's a tricky thing, and I think this has already been done. Like, Blizzard tried to do this with Warcraft. You know, they tried to make it more family friendly. They did the same thing Games Workshop did, release the kids' books and like the adventures in the happy orc lands. And they tried to do this weird stuff to and you can't do it. It's impossible. And Warcraft is sanitized, for Warhammer Fantasy. It's much. Just happier. A little cartoonier, and it's different, and then they tried to push it in that direction. I just don't think that's possible. So they should have learned from Blizzard. This is not going to happen.
like we talked before. Hey, there's 40K kids books, right? What was it, like the Necron harvesting? Right. That's a thing.
What's going to happen?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's tangent, but I only because we talked about HeroQuest. Last week, I kind of thought, like, man, I really want to make, like, an adventure board game in that HeroQuest vein with, like, the different color die with the symbols and stuff. And, of course, I first went to, like, fighting. And then I kind of went, like, I could do, like, Brighthammer. Mm-hmm. But the whole point of that is, like, you're heroes. And I could not get around the idea of whomever it is you're going to fight.
Yeah.
If they are sentient, living people, that's going to come with the baggage we've been discussing, and how do you get around that? And I don't know if you can, but like the person said, you can't sanitize it. If you're if you're going to sell war, you got to be like, this is war. You're going to be fighting these people, and just accept that that's not really for kids.
Right. However, even though that's such a natural, like the first time a kid picks up a stick, he points it at someone and goes bang bang. You know, that's
my kid is picking up, like, there are no guns in my house, but I'll make my kid hammer and shield and stuff. Like, that was, but like, so like pointing at me and like bam 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 bam. I'm like, she's picked it up from daycare, and I'm like, I don't like that, right? Like, I've made it a point, like, I don't like playing like that. But it kind of reinforces what you said, like play culture, like. Fighting is unfortunately kind of something you do, so kind of natural for kids to gravitate to it. And hey, those kids have all that disposable income, so let's grab them fast, right? But I don't know.
Yeah. So it's just a funny coincidence of these two things: the Chaos Portal opening underneath Nottingham, and then this
fake this announcement from the false Emperor,
right? Yeah. So very very funny. Relationship between those two things. So. I wonder if this is going to actually have like logistical effects and things.
Oh, maybe I don't know. Yeah,
because they said nothing is going to be fixed. They're expecting Monday, like the 29th or something, for them to actually be open again.
Wow.
So that's quite a few days, to be down.
But like you said, we don't know exactly what is at the headquarters. If this will affect this might just be like office buildings. I mean, I'm not saying they don't matter, right? But. We don't know.
Yeah. So, maybe they can all remote work around it. But it is the taint of chaos. No doubt.
That's an unfortunate word.
The taint of chaos. Anyhow, there is no transition to be making now. Well, speaking of like living campaigns, like we were talking about earlier, there's an interesting thing that they're doing. A Greek studio, Black Lantern Productions, is working on it's 5e. So, it's a setting for 5e that they're calling Soul Mist, and they've released an open beta. So Time of Judgment is the open beta. And what this is a series of 4 one-shot adventures that have pre-gen characters, and they kind of give you the background of the world, and you know the system, so you can play the system, and you explain the background of the world, and you kind of record the results. So you can play one of these one-shots, any one of them that you want, play them in order, or kind of interact with this however you want, and then report file voting. You can do voting.
Cool.
And so all of this voting and what's going to happen with this open beta is going to affect how the world appears in the Kickstarter. So in January, they're going to be doing a Kickstarter for this setting, and this Time of Judgment they're going to use to kind of inform them what people enjoyed the most about it, because it is 5e, but it starts out with a kind of a court trial. Okay. And so it's not, you know, hack and slash, right. Like right away you're starting in a courtroom. But it's interesting because I didn't know what the system was, and I was reading about the setting, and then I got to the pre-gens and I'm like, oh, 5e. Oh. It's obviously 5e. But
so your lawyer is also a paladin.
But yeah. But right away though, I was like, oh yeah, so I know this though. I don't have to be like, okay, what is the D66 system? And you know, there wasn't anything. It was the setting I had to learn. Not so that might be a big, you know, a big reason that people lean towards 5e. It's like so many people know how to play this. So if we just put DC 13, everyone's like, yeah. It's you know, already a language that is going to get people into your setting. So I thought this was an interesting approach, and I'll put links to to everything for the adventure itself, and then the voting form.
Interesting.
And a Greek studio as well. I haven't seen that before. We've seen some Italian studios supporting 5e, but this is the first Greek producer that we saw. So yeah, January 2022, Soul Mist.
The Kickstarter
will be on Kickstarter. Okay. But for now, you can take a look at Time of Judgment and kind of the races. They have like a werebeast race and a vampire race. So it's you know, they're pushing, you know, the kind of the fun parts of fantasy as much as they can.
Cool.
To kind of have, you know, kind of good and bad nature clashing against each other and stuff. So it's interesting stuff and beautiful illustration, of course. Yeah. So take a look at that. And see what you think. And I think it's interesting for small publishers to kind of open themselves up to that, because they're going to maybe get some information and some voting. Really? This is what people want? You know, it's like, so that'll be, it'll be fun to see their, you know, kind of reaction and how they change their setting or how they change, you know, what they're going to do with their adventures.
I certainly understand creating a product that your intended audience wants to engage with, right?
Right.
So yeah, the number of times I've been in front of people like, hey, help me out. Which of these things should I do, right? But I also kind of wonder, like, after a certain point, there comes a point where you're like, we are no longer making the game that we wanted to make.
Right?
That's going to be different places for different people. And what you said is absolutely true. One of the big reasons to stick with 5e is because people know the system.
Mm.
And so they can focus on the setting and what is different.
I mean...
I've talked before about how I did not grok the PBTA system until I read Dungeon World, because I was already, who isn't already so familiar with fantasy adventure role playing, where I went, oh, I get how you apply these rules to the game, because I am no longer trying to understand both setting and mechanics. I'm only focusing on one.
Nice.
So it's kind of the same thing the other way, right? Hey, mechanics are the same. Figure out what's going on with the setting a lot easier, because you don't have to worry about numbers and rules. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. Unfortunately, maybe that input from players can become like that executive decision maker. Mm. It's like, oh, they say we want to do this. Now let's do this. You know, let's do something else. Like you'll oppose some of their decisions because it isn't what the game set, you know, the game world you wanted to.
Again, I forget who saw this, but I saw something pretty good the other day. Don't accept criticism from someone you wouldn't accept advice from.
Oh, there you
go.
So
it's like, there's going to be outliers on those things. So,
yeah.
To be fair, if everybody says, no, we want this, then you're like, oh, okay, well, let's rethink it. But if there's only a few people going, oh, this fucking sucks, and like the majority of people go, well, it doesn't suck, right?
Right.
I'm just bitter about stuff at work changing because two students complained about something where it's just like, really? Really? We're making this major change because a fraction of people complained about something?
The two most influential students.
Oh, obviously, because they were the only two to respond. So that's 100% of respondents said this, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it's funny that we've come a long way, because it used to be if you wrote a letter to a television station, it would have effect because you actually, you know, went to the post office, you put a stamp, and you did something.
Maybe we need to go
back. Now you can just launch emails, but TV still like looks at that stuff and says, "Oh, how much should we weigh this?" It's like, really? Oh, come on, it's zero effort. Yeah. Just sit on your couch and fire email at people. So yeah, it's funny. But
we are now only accepting criticism and advice from people who write in physically to the show and pay for postage to Japan.
Yep. That's right.
We'll get it about 3 months after you send it.
That's right. So all your dislikes have to be actually physically. Yeah,
we're
physically
just going to open up this letter, just thumbs down,
right? Or just some sort of arsenic powder or something like that.
Hopefully not. don't do that idea.
That's the biggest dislike of all.
Yeah, really.
All right. Cool. Well, that's it for this week.
Yep. Cool.
So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. That's Hivemind, HYVEMYND, where I'm still painting. I'm still thinking about a box set for Bright Hammer and pricing stuff out there.
Cool.
And interspersed with parenting tweets, because that takes up the majority of my time when I'm not at work. So yeah. Right. Nice. How about you?
So I do a single panel gag cartoon that I draw on live stream on both YouTube and Twitch. So abusecartoons.com, and then abusecartoons on all social media for that. And if you want to support what we're doing here at Upturned Table, upturntable.com is the website. Becoming one of the elite, one of the group of patrons that...
Speaking of accepting advice.
Yes, yes, exactly, yeah. So giving us feedback and also helping us understand like what not to be so excited about. So patreon.com/upturntable. And you can also become a member of this channel. So click that join button below. And so membership gets you the same access as becoming a patron. So some people aren't big fans of Patreon.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're bigger fans of YouTube, but and always please feel free to suggest other ways that you would prefer to support what we're doing, because we've had like the coffee.com other accounts, or directly through PayPal. We have a PayPal donation link as well. So if there's certain things you just don't feel like supporting or don't want to create an account for, just let us know what you do prefer.
Yeah, speaking of Werebeast, become a like and subscribe. Yeah.
Sorry, like joke's never going to die. Nice. So thanks for joining us, and we'll be back again next week.
Happy Thanksgiving. Later, mortals.
Goodbye.